Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broder. We're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing today?
I'm good, Chris. I've had a busy week, but it's been a busy week full of fun and games. I went to the zoo. I went to the zoo. That's all I got for you, mate. That's all I got for you. Did a couple of podcasts about the football, released me Bernie podcast, and yeah, just been kind of stressing out about that ever since, to be quite frank.
Tell us about the zoo. Was this your birthday the present, zoo. Wasn't it? Your late birthday it, present?
Well, kind of. I went to the zoo a month ago. My partner bought me a ticket to the zoo for my birthday, and I bought her a ticket to the zoo just because, and so we went to the zoo twice in a month. Wow. And I think that means we go on a list of some sort. I think I used to work in a zoo, and the sort of kind of people who were really obsessed with the zoo deserve to be on lists. That's all I'm saying. They're just a little bit too keen.
Do you get like a special stamp card for going to the zoo, like getting a Costa coffee or a Starbucks coffee, the same sort of thing?
Yeah, well, I'm not here to like advertise Portland, because at the end of the day, I paid full price for it. But good God, what an experience that is! Like massive amount of space, animals, you know, in great conditions, and they've just got little baby rhinos running around all over the gaff. It's brilliant.
I mean, for our listeners that don't know, Pete used to work at a zoo. He was friends with the chimpanzees. What were the breed of monkeys? What were they? What the variety?
We had loads. Trikos had an insane amount of primates. We had gibbons. We had old world monkeys. We had new world monkeys. We had bonobos, which you don't see very often, that kind of weird fourth ape that no one talked about up until sort of 1912 or something.
I love to think, like, in an alternate reality, it's just you just working at a zoo with the monkeys and dreaming of being a podcast host.
If it paid any kind of money, I wouldn't be against it. But it is vocational, and I can't speak for Portland, but certainly the zoo that I used to work at certainly paid people for their passions, but didn't pay them particularly well. It's probably not a great thing.
Crushing
doing
the dreams.
High up.
Crushing the dreams of zoologists and vets the world over. Well,
more than a jet teacher, let's make that very clear.
It's not hard, to be honest. Although, to be fair, the jet programme is paid in yen, right? And when I came here, I think it was about £30,000 or $32,000. But then the year I arrived, 2012, Shinzo Abe, the then Prime Minister, did some sort of Arbonomics, he called it. It was really clever. It was Shinzo Abe plus economics equals Arbonomics, except it was shit. Basically, he like made the yen like worthless. So my salary went from £30,000 to about £20,000 in the space of six months. And from what I understand, it didn't really work. I'm not sure, but I wasn't happy about that. But
sorry, mate.
It's tragic. But
I'm sorry about your wage 10 years ago, 7 years ago.
Crack out. I'm sorry, tissues. Mate. Crack out. I mean, it's been a funny old week, though. I did release the 12 Reasons Not to Move to Japan video. It's been a long time coming.
Hey.
And you've definitely watched it, haven't you, Pete? You loved
definitely
it, didn't you?
Every last... Oh, from number one to number 11. You know what, Chris? I'd even go so far as say that I was a big fan of number 12 as well. All the reasons not to move to Japan, all of them, all went in my head, and I enjoyed every last second of it.
You didn't watch it, did you?
I've been busy. I've been at the zoo.
You've been
Chris.
In the zoo.
I'll watch it. I've not been on my little elliptical trainer, so I've not watched any YouTube. I've not caught up with Linus Tech Tips, the wacky things they're doing with technology and graphics cards and stuff like that. I've not caught up with the lockpicking lawyer. I've not caught up with the man who fixes shoes in Tring. It's just I'm behind on all of it.
Well, it's quite all right, Pete, because we're going to talk about it in this week's podcast. For those of you, we do have a lot of listeners that don't watch the Abroad in Japan channel, more like podcast listeners. You guys like listen to the podcast. Right. And we can sort of talk about things I didn't cover in the video. I can go above and beyond some of the stuff I said. As I've said in the past, I'm more open on podcast than I am in video because you can't comment, believe a podcast. I can get away with saying anything. That's how it works. You definitely can't record it. So we're going to talk about that. But first things first, we've got a story here from Maximilian Shug. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I just finished listening to the current episode where you guys talked about the Japanese media and how they toe the party line and tend to fall in line with the politicians. I thought it might interest Pete and you that the five biggest newspapers in Japan are still selling massive amounts of daily newspapers, the biggest of which, the Yomiuri Shimbun, is selling a whopping 8 million copies of its morning paper. Whereas the smallest, the Sankei Shimbun, is still selling a million copies a day. That is pretty impressive, given how in most of the world, papers are just going out of fashion. Like, certainly, I don't remember the sensation of holding a newspaper. I remember thinking it was very unpleasant, though. It's very cumbersome and annoying. So, as a point of comparison, the biggest Western non-tabloid newspaper based on daily sales is, as far as I'm aware, the US Today, with 2 million copies, which is less than any of the four Japanese newspapers bigger than the Sankei Shimbun. And the other papers are Yomiuri, Mainichi, and Nikkei. Of course, they do more than just print newspapers these days. Most of the big newspaper companies own their own TV stations. But what I still can't quite believe is the fact the Yomiuri company owns a sadly not newspaper-themed amusement park called Yomiuri Land, that's allegedly 30 minutes from Shinjuku. Has either of you ever been to Yomiuri Land? If not, what would you expect a newspaper-owned amusement park to be like? Greetings from Munich, Maximilian Shug. I've not been to Yomiuri Land. Have you heard of this place, Pete?
No, I've never heard of it in my life. I just like the fact that it would be, I mean, I'm imagining like a Big Dipper ship, like a printing press. They'd have Ink World where you would swim around in ink, and that's about all I can think of right now. And I imagine that it probably less thought went into creating it in the first place.
Well, I'm looking at it now, and it actually looks like a fully fleshed out theme park. It's got a big wheel. It's got two or three roller coasters. It looks quite good. This is so weird. Yeah. How does anyone know this?
What makes it newspaper related, though? I don't understand. Is it all made out of paper?
It says Yomiuri Land is a Japanese amusement park first opened in 1964. It's situated on a hillside and features rides such as roller coasters and water flumes. It's home to Yomiuri Giants Stadium, one of the training fields for the Yomiuri Giants baseball team, and was the primary training ground before Tokyo Dome was completed. It's run by Yomiuri Group, the parent of Yomiuri Shimbun, and was constructed. They've constructed a bathhouse as well to attract more senior citizens. Wow. I know where we're going, Pete, the next time you're over here. We're going to Yomiuri.
Yes, please.
Get yourself down to Yomiuri Land. I didn't know that. I've been to, of those four newspapers, I've actually been lucky to feature in three of them. I've been in the Yomiuri, the Mainichi, and the Nikkei. Not the Sankei, though, to my knowledge. And Yomiuri...
Too highbrow.
I'm not worthy. The Yomiuri Shimbun, they have a massive skyscraper in downtown Tokyo, just across the road from Tokyo Station. And it feels very intimidating. You go in and the lobby is like the size of like a football stadium. And it's built in like this kind of brick it's got like this kind of big, huge concrete blocks. It's quite an impressive building. But my meeting was held in a very underwhelming and boring conference room looking out a window. I wasn't impressed. But yeah, the newspapers here do sell big, though. Japan, they still love paper. I honestly don't know why, though. Can you think of any other reasons newspapers still sell so much, Pete?
Well, I mean, we said it before. We have ideas about Japan being quite futuristic, but the fax machine and the phone call is very much the way people get things done. They've not moved from cash to credit cards yet. I imagine newspapers probably got legs for a little while longer.
Yeah,
and a lot of commuting as well.
Well, yeah, and only this week I saw finally that I can use my Visa debit card to touch things and pay. You know, like we've had in the UK or anywhere in the world for years now, you just put your credit card to it, it goes beep, and your money's magically gone. Well, you finally got that here now. It's very exciting.
Yeah, there you go.
Losing my money very quickly and swiftly.
But again, maybe it is also because mobile phones, like the flip phones, were very popular for a very long time. I remember when I first went to Japan, smartphones weren't really a thing until a few years ago. Like the prevalence of kind of like little flip phones that didn't have all of the features, couldn't give you a newspaper in your hand. But obviously, they'll probably find it quite difficult moving forward. But you still have like kind of idle newspapers. You know, newspapers obsessed with AKB47 and bands like that that are released pretty regularly. So, you know, there's still be a market for them.
Well, and they still have a lot of CD sales here, right? Japan's one of the few countries where people still buy CDs. And going back to idol groups encourage their audience, their fans, to buy multiple CD copies, because in each CD you get like a little voucher to shake their hand. And a good friend of mine, Ian from Journey Across Japan, I think, told me a story of how his friend worked as like a bouncer at one of these concerts for a big idol group. And one guy rocked up with like 300 vouchers and just shook one of the idol girls' hands for like 20 minutes.
Half an hour.
And there's a guy there, one of the bodyguard guys, has to like time it with a stopwatch. He hits the start button and he's watching to make sure your handshake is precisely within the limit. And he was just standing there for like 20 minutes just watching the clock tick down. But this
Disengage? Did he have to disengage from the handshake and then go in again for the next 30 seconds? Or could he just roll it in?
It was a continuous, like, never-ending handshake. Can you imagine
horrific.
That? It is horrific.
Horrific.
It's truly horrific. But that's why. So CD sales are still a thing. And going back to the flip phone, just the other day I was in a taxi and the phone rang for the driver and he picked it up and which is always a little bit worrying. But he was an old man. He must be in his mid-70s. It turned out to be a flip-out phone. He flipped it open. He sort of whipped it like that. And he went, "Untenshuda," literally, "I'm driving." And he flipped it shut again and tossed it on the seat. It was very cool. And I wish I had a flip phone. Oh, I don't have a flip phone.
That's pretty badass.
They are pretty cool.
Well, they're coming back. The Galaxy Flip is here. Flip, flip.
The one with two screens on it that turns like two screens that become one.
Yeah, it's like an old Razr, isn't it? The Razr Motorola one.
Count me in. I'll have one. So this week, guys, 12 reasons not to move to Japan. We've got a list here of 12. Pete is going to grill me on each one, and we're going to discuss each one on the list. So, important point, this topic, I didn't really... my plan isn't to, like, put people off moving to Japan. I'd never do that. I mean, the Abroad Japan channel is all about encouraging people to come to Japan, see it for yourself, whatever. But I don't think it's for everyone. Honestly, I don't. And I know that most of my friends back in the UK probably wouldn't necessarily like living here. So it's all about that. And I've, you know, made 200 videos. We've done 100 podcasts promoting Japan. But while we kind of open-minded in the podcast about talking about some of the negative sides of Japan, I'd not really done it in a video before. So it was a little bit scary doing it this week. I thought there'd be like a backlash. I thought people would be angry. I thought there'd be loads of Japanese comments saying, "This isn't acceptable." But actually, it's been a good response. So I think it's encouraging. So what have we got on the list, Pete? Let's dive in.
I'll have to leave some more comments then, if they're all broadly positive.
I hate you.
Right. Number one, no personal space. People getting up in your grill, on the tube, on the metro, walking down the street. There's just too many people in such a small space.
Absolutely. And before we crack on, I'm going to open my... alcohol. Is it? Am I an alcoholic?
What's that? Whoa, steady. Well, you're usually drinking coffee. You've gone from coffee straight to high borus. Unbelievable.
This is a lemon sour. This is like a... It's essentially like Japanese-style vodka with lemon and honey. And I've got a worrying addiction to it.
Loose.
I've had this for the last four nights in a row because I'm a bit burnt out from editing Journey Across Japan, and it's turning me into an alcoholic at a rapid pace.
Well, I mean, Chris, they always say if you're really busy at work, if you're really exhausted, why not consider alcoholism? That's what they always say. The energy boost that is liver problems.
In my defence, it is only 3%. So can you be an alcoholic if you're drinking only 3% alcoholic beverages?
Depends on how many, mate. Depends on how many.
Let's not get into that. All right, no personal space. At this point, I put it on the list. And yeah, you're quite right, trains are packed. But for me, the main aspect there was Japanese apartments are very they're small, which isn't necessarily a problem. Like, you find living in a small space, it's kind of cool. And even now in my 30s, I don't mind it. What I do mind is this noise here. Get ready. Can you hear that?
Oh.
That is the sound.
Who's paper next wall. Door? Who's, what have you heard? Someone knocking back at someone in your house.
It's not that. Like, help. Last week I heard a couple. I can't remember which side of the house, the apartment they were, but like, I heard them shout for like an hour. And you just hear things through these damn walls so clearly. Because obviously, while the apartments are small here, and you are going to be spending like $1,000 a month on rent, it's more just the fact that when I have friends come over past like 9 p.m, if they laugh too loud, I'm like, oh, it'd be better quiet for the neighbours. Or if I want to watch Die Hard, I've got to put headphones on, God forbid. Headphones, I'm watching Die Hard, it's awful. And so, like, just being noisy past like 9 p.m, you just feel like you can't really enjoy your own space. And that really does get to you. And I think for a lot of people, that would drive them mad. I know it drives me mad, but could you live in such an environment, Pete? I mean, you did live in a small space in London before.
I did, yeah. I'm quite a quiet person. I'm not someone who's going to, you know, start blasting out stuff at all hours. And I do, my parents, for example, they walk around and it's like a bloody silent disco in their house because they're just constantly, they just listen to their televisions with like wireless RF headphones. So they just dodder around the house. And when they try to get the attention of the other person, they really have to shout because the other person's invariably wearing headphones, which really makes me laugh. But it's not ideal, is it? But I've lived in a small place before, and as long as I lived by myself, it wouldn't be a problem. But yeah, if you've got people to the left, right, underneath you, above you, I mean, that is difficult. If indeed you can get an apartment, we're going to move to point number two. It's difficult as a gaijin to even get an apartment. It's certainly way more expensive, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I've had two or three friends move apartments in Tokyo this last 3 or 4 months, and they've all had the same problem, and I had it too. Like, the good news is when you come to Japan, you'll end up living in probably an apartment that your company's got for you. So in my case, on the JET program, JET got me an apartment, and it was pretty cheap. It was only $100 a month, subsidized. The miracle of subsidized apartments. But when I moved to Sendai, it got a bit more complicated. I did have to look for one, and I didn't have much luck. And the reason behind that is Japanese rental agents often tell the sort of the landlord not to rent out to foreigners because they're a flight risk. And apparently a lot of foreigners on their last month, they just skip town and don't pay their rent.
Right, okay.
Allegedly. And I've heard mixed statistics on that, but you can decide. So if you are a landlord, Pete, and you've got an apartment, you want to rent it out, and you go to a real estate agent, there's a little box you can tick saying no foreigners. And from that point on, no foreigners can stay there. So I even read a statistic, I think, in the news just this week that 9 out of 10 apartments in Tokyo don't allow foreign residents to rent there. And there are some ways around it. Like, you can get a guarantor, like a Japanese person, a Japanese friend to be a guarantor, or a company who will vouch on your behalf to pay for the rent if you decide to fly back to Hartlepool and not pay your rent. But even then, I've had friends...
A lot of direct flights.
Direct flight, Tokyo to Hartlepool. It's the flight that needs to happen. God, that would be fucking jarring. One hell of a culture shock. It's going from Tokyo to North England, but it's a problem. Like, I've had friends that have got turned down by guarantor companies. Like, you can pay some sort of monthly insurance to get a guarantor company, but even then, it's no guarantee of getting anywhere. So, yeah, you are going to experience discrimination. I got turned down by at least two apartments in Sendai. I had to get Ryotaro to actually help me out, which is the first
demeaning,
nice thing
isn't it? Demeaning.
It's a sad day,
isn't it?
It's a sad day.
Got you by the curlies, hasn't he? Got you by the Jaffas.
It's terrible when you have to turn to Ryotaro for help. It's awful.
It's certainly something that that people in the UK are experiencing. It's certainly at this point where no one's got any cash. Landlords are really careful about who they rent out to. And of course, as with everything in this sort of arena, it's not, you know, the people who are kind of, you know, the normal kind of populace in Britain that are affected the worst. It's immigrants immediately, you know, people who have come here to escape war, to escape famine, to escape whatever. And because they don't have any connections in the country, they can't have a guarantor. And people are, and landlords are asking for, like, you know, the best part of 6 months worth of rent, and then another 6 months to complete your year in the home. And obviously, who the hell has that kind of money? Who the hell has that kind of investment in
well, yeah,
home, especially when you're renting?
Certainly made me more sympathetic. Obviously, I'm not fleeing war, but I'm kind of sympathetic towards them a lot more now, or more empathetic, rather, now that I understand what that could kind of feel like. But, you know, another point is you do have to have a lot of money as a deposit. Like, you have to play this thing called key money in Japan, which is dreadful. It's like you have to pay 2 months of rent as like a gift to the landlord.
Yes.
So if you're the landlord, Pete's apartment, and I'm the tenant, I have to pay you, you know, could be as much as $2,000 if we're paying $1,000 a month rent as just sort of thank you money. Money, even though I'm going to be paying you for the next year or two of rent, you get a bit of thank you as well. So it's honestly ridiculous. So it's costly.
It's
discrimination.
It's not
rubbish.
Right.
It sucks. So apartments, and it's a big turn off. We're going to carry on our list in a moment, but first, quick ad break.
Bernie Katz was fun, he was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up.
And there was something magical about this young man that just had a glint in his eye, that didn't give a shit about anything, but loved everything.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire.
Always in a leopard skin jacket, whirling around like a windmill. I know, she's a character. I don't know if those people exist anymore. They're sort of dying out. Everything's changed.
It is a bank holiday weekend in London, the late summer of 2017. The streets around Kentish Town, just north of the city and halfway towards Hampstead Heath, are unusually quiet. That evening, in a small, converted flat, just a 15-minute bus ride from King's Cross Station, Bernie Katz, pocket-sized and long-standing front-of-house manager of London's Groucho Club, is found dead by his landlord.
I said to him, what happened? You know, and he said, we are not talking about it. And yes, there have been the rumours. We've all heard. I mean, what did I hear specifically? That he was murdered.
The relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His dad was a proper gangster. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off.
They're all part of the same fetid, seething, self-referential nest of vipers that I think the Groucho have become.
Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
I get a call from Bernie and he is in £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. We all collected and paid the debt.
The way that the Albanians operate is very, very peculiar because they did not operate like any other mafia in Europe.
I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Listen now. A Stack production, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Yeah, and to make the money for the apartment and the rent and the mortgage, you have to work, and work you shall over time. The work environment is frequently difficult. You frequently don't have much time off, and you've got to work until 10 p.m. a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so that's point number three, work environment. Basically, I think only half of most Japanese people only take 10 out of their 20 days of holiday leave, only taking 50%. I think it's the lowest in the developed world for that. And the reason behind that is if you do take your holiday leave in Japan, all of it, then you will look bad at work. Your boss will pass you over for that promotion. You'll not be seen as a team player. You'll be seen as letting down the team by going off to Hawaii. Mm. Unless it's a good reason, like a wedding or a honeymoon or something like that. If you just want to take the day off and use your holiday leave, you will be ostracized for it. It comes at a cost, which is very stupid and counterproductive, because it's important to obviously take time off and not be burnt out, which people are, because they are expected, in many cases in Japan, to not leave the office until their boss has, right? So you'll be sitting in the office thinking at 7 p.m., oh, God, I really want to go home now. But if your supervisor, your manager's there, you won't go home necessarily. Like, there's that pressure to stay on until they've gone. Because if they're putting in the effort, why aren't you, kind of thing. That kind of culture exists, which is very different from the UK, where I remember every job I've ever had, I've been very much forced to take my holiday and actually use it. But in Japan, there isn't that environment. I know they're trying to change it, but it's not good. Like, you have to show a great degree of loyalty to your company here. And I have friends that are expected to go into work at a moment's notice, are expected to answer emails and phone calls relating to work on the weekends and the days off. And above all, it's just hard to get days off as well. So yeah, work environment, it isn't great, particularly in a medium to large Japanese company. If you want to get around that, work for a foreign company in Japan that's got kind of foreign practices, or a smaller, more entrepreneurial, forward-thinking company. I think that's the best way around it, to be honest. Yeah,
definitely. And I will sort of group these two together. Point four and point five, goodbye independence and standing out. What's that all about, Chris?
Well, goodbye independence. Obviously, when you come here, you're going to need a lot of help to get things done. A language aside, I mean, the language is one key factor, because even if you do learn how to speak in Japanese nice and quickly, the writing takes years, you know. And so to get things done, whether it's a phone contract, a bank, a car, you need to be able to read kanji, you need to be able to write kanji, and you can't do that. Like, I don't really know anyone who's able to do that on the first day they move here. So in my first year, it was debilitating not being able to do anything. You know, I had to always ask for help, even using my bloody microwave. I didn't know what was going on there because it was all in kanji, and it was a nightmare to even cook my microwave lasagna, which is the cornerstone of any healthy diet.
Exactly.
So yeah, independence goes out the window. If you're someone who doesn't like to ask for help, it's not going to be a fun first year or two. Although the good news is, if you do make friends here, hopefully you can draft them into helping. And Natsuki and Ryotaro have been very useful. Ryotaro in getting the apartment, and Natsuki helped me sort out my car insurance, and he's never let me forget it. Yeah. He's like, every time we do anything, we go out for dinner, he's like, who's paying for this? I'm like, oh, I don't know. He's like, oh, he got the car insurance. Oh, okay, Natsuki, I'll pay for the chicken. And then the other one, standing out. Yeah, I mean, another thing is, Japan is completely homogenous. 98% of people here ethnically Japanese. And if you don't live in somewhere like Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, you aren't going to see that many people who aren't Japanese fundamentally, and you are going to stand out. And certainly where I lived in rural Yamagata Prefecture when I first got here, I had a lot of people staring at me. Like, I'd have a bad day, I'd be walking home from school, and I'd look up at the crossing, the intersection, and there'd be like four, five, six cars, whatever, and they'd all just be staring at me. And people here are quite good generally. They don't stare. But for some reason, when they're in their car, they don't care, because they know they can drive away. Right. And that's when people stare at you the most. But like, you'll get those looks. Like, I've had people, like, you'll go into a supermarket to buy some vegetables, some fruits, all the healthy things to go with your microwave lasagna. And there'll be a little kid who'll just point at you and scream and start crying. And they'll be like, oh, that's weird.
Oh dear.
I mean, at the end of the day, you stand out. And if you see another foreigner, if you see someone who's not Japanese, you'll be like, oh my god, what's that? Just as much as anyone. But I think if you're someone who likes being anonymous, who likes to keep their head down, or just doesn't want lots of people staring at them in the supermarket, then it's a tough one to deal with potentially. My good friend from Ireland, I remember we went to the supermarket once and someone came over to him and said to him, where are you from? And he said, I'm from Ireland. And he was like, Iceland. Oh, Sagoa, it's so cold in Iceland. And he was like, no, from Ireland. Oh, Iceland. Yeah, I love Iceland. And just because he was foreign, this guy just came up to him and interrogated him on the weather system of Iceland, even though he's from Ireland.
Well, there you go. Well, Ireland's also quite chilly, to be quite frank.
It is.
So you're always going to stand out. And that kind of ties in with number six as well. Old-fashioned thinking. People, they regard outsiders as being different and never being able to, being possible that you could assimilate into your new society and your new community. But, I mean, that does kind of pull Japan back a little bit. They do have very kind of antiquated you know, feelings and ideas about certain members of the public and certain things.
Well, in particular, when it comes to women, right, gender equality is off, is not really at all good. Japan's ranked 120th by the World Economic Forum when it comes to gender equality. Like, the point there is, I think for women coming to Japan to live and work, it will be more difficult to fit in, to get the good jobs, to get a good salary. Like, if you look in a workplace, women are kind of expected to be the ones that pour the tea at the meetings. They're the ones expected to pour your beer and look after you at a work party. And I think that could be a little bit shocking for women coming here in particular. But yeah, I think that, if you're coming here as a woman, it's a bit more difficult. There is a bit of change going on. You know, the Tokyo mayor, Mayor Koike, she's a woman, and they're currently looking at having the first empress ever. They're still weighing up whether they can do it or not, because the next in line is a woman. But we've had stories over the years on here, haven't we? Remember the was it the head of the Tokyo Creative Tokyo Olympic opening ceremony, Hiroshi Sasaki? I think he said that Naomi Watanabe should be dressed up as an Olympic, as some sort of pig. Japanese comedian, and
bit strong.
What is it? I love the way he went. I bet he felt really clever when he was like pig.
Yeah,
Olympics,
his little joke.
Olympic.
Yeah,
and everyone, you're going to lose your job. And that was straight after the other guy, the head of the Tokyo Olympics, messed up by saying we should have less women in the board meetings because women talk loads and that's annoying.
They were all they're already in trouble. They're already on like high alert for this kind of shit. And that's what they bring us. Speaking of that, we could sort of skip to number nine then go back. But limited opportunities. If you are a woman, if you are a foreigner, if you are not of Japanese, if you don't have a passport, it does make things difficult. If you look a little bit different to the normal Japanese man on the street or woman on the street, that is going to limit your assimilation and the way you can grow inside the very rigid and very kind of antiquated situation that a lot of people find themselves inside business.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, you're instantly going to lose out to a native Japanese person for most jobs, unless you've got some sort of inherent something useful skill. For example, I'm an unskilled worker to some extent. Actually, am I skilled, Pete? Am I skilled?
Oh, you could do some video editing.
Yeah, skilled.
That's a skill.
Yeah, I can edit. But like, I came as an English teacher, and I don't know if that's technically skilled, but I had something that you can't get in Japan, right? Which is a native English speaker. So that's why English teachers are always, there's always going to be jobs there in that field here. And there are jobs in Tokyo where you can work in things like IT. There's quite a lot of IT workers, video games, interpretation. But for the most part, it is going to be difficult to maybe bring your sort of career to Japan. Like, we get a lot of you guys sending us emails like, can I become an architect in Japan? And can I do this in Japan? And something like architecture, you could do it, but you'd probably need to be fluent in Japanese first to get up to speed on all the skills and terminology they use here, which is going to take years to get to that point. So I think it's difficult, and I think most of the opportunities in Japan lie in Tokyo. Like 9 out of 10 of my friends, they all live in Tokyo or big cities like Osaka. If you want to live in the countryside and pretend you're in a Hayao Miyazaki film and cycle through the countryside and with a smile on your face, that's going to be a lot more difficult and a lot tougher to actually make it happen, unfortunately. The opportunities are a bit limited. Yeah.
Well, that sort of ties up to number seven, romance. Not just the romance for the romance. Japanese countryside, but also finding personal relationships is very difficult. I mean, we'll skip over doctors because that's obviously very difficult and very paramount if you're in some kind of bother. But romance is a really good point. You know, you are more than just a job. You are more than just going down to Akihabara and looking at manga and stuff. You know, you're more than that. You need relationships. You need friendships. And as with any foreign country, it's difficult, isn't it?
It's difficult. It's very difficult. I think there's that perception, isn't there? Like, if you come to Japan as a foreigner, people are going to be like coming at you left, right, and center actually sort of be attracted to you. But actually, I think it's quite the opposite. When I was teaching a class once, I was talking to my colleague, an English teacher, about this. And then we asked the students, who here would ever date a foreigner? And one person in the class of 40 put their hand up. Like, it's not something anybody actively thinks about here, really. It's just a lot of stress. The cultural language hurdles, a nightmare. Your parents aren't going to be happy when you bring back Pete Donaldson or Chris Broad from Hartlepool or Maidstone to come and date your daughter, because they're going to think, oh crap, who's going to look after us in 30 years when our daughter's off in Hartlepool? You know, every Japanese parent's nightmare, Pete. But
and then I'll show them a picture of Hartlepool and then be like, she'll probably stay here.
Take her to see the Gibbons. I don't think it's complicated. And beyond that, I know we talked about once infidelity is a thing here. It's a bigger problem than I think we would realize in the West. Like, there's always studies that are like, infidelity is not too bad in Japan, but really it's bollocks. It is bad. It's way worse than I know of the UK. Like, I've spoken to so many Japanese guys about it. And I think one thing is there's just a really good sort of nighttime service for things, isn't there, here? We've got the hostess bar culture. You've got love hotels that you can go in easily. You've got Soapland, which I don't even know what to explain what Soapland is for people that don't know what it is. Go and look it up. But let's just say it's like a brothel, I guess. Oh, yeah, brothel.
It's a grown-up bath.
It's a grown-up bath. Lots of soap. Bet your favourite soaps. They got it all there. Decadent Japanese soap. But they have this sort of nighttime industry that I think in Japan they don't really consider as cheating necessarily in that environment. But we probably would back home, and we wouldn't be too happy if we found out our partners are going to those kind of places. So infidelity is an issue. There's the cultural hurdle there, and I've dated two Japanese women. It didn't go that well. It got moving very quickly because there is that expectation here that you have to get married by about 28. They say people here that aren't married or dating before that aren't dating after 25 are like rotten Christmas cake, right, or something. Because Christmas cake isn't edible.
Christmas cake's always rotten. It's just in a jar for ages. Honestly,
it isn't good, is it? But so bear that in mind. It's probably going to be more difficult here to find a partner than it would be back home, which I think is a perception that's opposite to that. I think we think it's going to be easier, but it's not.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, and I guess to wrap up the 12 reasons why that I've definitely watched on YouTube, definitely 12 reasons not to move to Japan and the show as well. We've got, you know, on top of making friends and on top of the fact that, you know, sex and relationships and, like you say, the nighttime service, there's a lot of cheating and stuff like that, simply because, you know, there's the overbearing manner of the patriarchy in Japan. It's a very old school society. Mm. Men are king and you know, men can get up to all sorts and get away with it. Number 12 is, you know, forever outsider. Because of the complicated etiquette, and that's at number 11 with us, and indeed in the video, because of that complicated etiquette, because of this perception that you are never going to be able to learn every last thing about Japanese culture, you're always going to be the outsider. You will never climb higher than your race allows.
I think that's, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, you're always going to be a foreigner living in Japan. You're never going to be seen as Japanese, no matter what you do, because in Japan it's kind of seen as blood, right? You're Japanese if your parents were Japanese. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. You still experience the same things every day. Like, oh, you can speak Japanese. Oh, you can use chopsticks. It's still, for me, the way I'm treated now is the same I was treated on day one when I got here, which is a surreal thing. But, you know, you always feel like an outsider, even in conversations with acquaintances or strangers. They're always like, wow, what are you doing in Japan? When are you going home? There's this perception that you're not really here to stay. And I think that can make it difficult to want to build your life here long term. Like, I don't know many friends that want to actually live in Japan forever for that reason, because they're never going to move past that point. But at the same time, I do know a lot of people that, I do know a few people that are married, have a Japanese wife, have kids, and are making the best of it and have had a great life here. And I think the upside to that is, even though it is a bit annoying, always being this outsider and always being slightly outside of things, it shouldn't necessarily get in the way of leading a rich and fulfilling life here in Japan. And I think that's the main takeaway. Like, I asked a good friend about this who's been here like twice the length that I've been. I've been here 9 years, he's been here double that. And he said, yeah, it can be annoying at times, but I never expected to be Japanese. I've always expected to be this kind of outsider. And hasn't stopped him from building a loving family and having a good work life. So that's the main thing, right?
It sound like you he made it somehow. He made the loving family. I've built my loving family.
Made it out of sand and dreams, Pete. Sand and dreams. But that is the list of 12 reasons. We did skip over, I think, making friends a bit difficult, but there's the list. I think if you want to hear more, guys, go and watch the video on the YouTube channel. It's actually a 29-minute video. It's a massive undertaking. It was an absolute bloody nightmare to produce it. but it's doing well, and so I'm happy about that. But if you want to hear those points in more detail, and if you want to hear any one of those points in detail in an individual podcast or a video, let us know at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Always open to ideas and topics that you want us to discuss. That's all we've got time for today, though, folks. It's a bit of a longer episode than usual because we talked about the 12 points. We'll be back with your questions from the fax machine in the next episode on Wednesday. But for now, check out the video. We've got Journey Across Japan coming in the next few days. So it's all hands on deck here. But for now, guys, have a great weekend, have a great start to the week, and we'll see you all over again on the Abroad Japan podcast on Wednesday. Bye for now.
You can't see Chris, but his editing eyes are very tired looking.
but the alcohol is making it all
stop
happen.
Drinking the alcohol. It's never the answer.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.